And thanks for joining me this evening. I'm Aaron Hay. You're listening to Mizzou Music on Classical 90.5 FM. I am joined here, of course, by phone, as we're all practicing social distancing at the moment here at Mizzou and all over Missouri and, in fact, all over North America as well. I'm joined by our director of choral conducting, our Paul Cram. Paul, how are you?
Hi, Aaron. It's good to talk with you.
You too. And graduate student Marcus Jarrell Ruff. Marcus, how are you?
I'm well, Aaron. Thanks for asking. How are you?
I am getting through it. We're
good.
Adapting, and it's been a lot good. It's been interesting, but it's been a lot of fun as
Indeed.
Well. So we're basically what we have been doing on the show is inviting some of our guests on and having them talk about a piece that brings them happiness or brings them joy or brings them comfort during these times. But we've actually got something even a little more interesting than that today, because just before things really started getting up to a head of steam here with the university closing for students and going to remote learning, the University of Missouri University Singers went to the American Choral Directors Association conference here in for the Southwest region. Is that right?
Yeah, this was located this year in Little Rock, Arkansas. So we were slated in one of the main evening programs. And the theme of the overall conference was perfect vision. And it's talking about looking toward the future, which is really timely as the virus epidemic was just getting started during that time, and thinking about how do we manage in the future, not only for our individual selves, but also for our artistic selves. Where do we fit in the current situation? And where do we as artists, where do we as human beings in a global world fit with each other as we look to the future?
Interesting. And so this is an event that is held not annually, but every other year.
Every other year, it alternates with a national conference of the same organization, American Choral Directors Association.
Okay. And so the great thing about this was you were, the University Singers were invited to perform a piece, this piece by William Grant Still, Harlem Renaissance era composer. And
right. Why
don't you tell me a little bit about it?
Absolutely. Presented under Odyssey Chamber Series, which is a nonprofit organization here in Columbia. This past September, we did the second annual Evolution of the African American Spiritual Concert. In 2018, we did the first concert that started just after the Civil War and really chronologically went up until about the Civil Rights era. So about 1860-ish approximately to about 1950. But we all felt, myself, Dr. Jolie Rock Brown, Dr. Brandon Boyd of Mizzou, and Dr. Maya Gibson, also of Mizzou, felt that there was more to tell, and we didn't really encapsulate all of the spirituals and the history of spirituals in that one concert. So Odyssey brought us back for a second year, which was this past September 2019, and we picked up where we left off at the Civil Rights era, and then we moved forward to present day. And that collaboration also saw us working with Prairie View A&M Chamber Choir, directed by Dr. Ajan Taylor, which then segued perfectly into this William Grant Still. So I'll toss it back to Dr. Krabs.
Yeah. So we made a good collaboration together, and this piece, And They Lynched Him on a Tree, was one that I've had on my sights ever since I did a little presentation with American Choral Music Overseas when I was on my research leave in 2015. It was written in 1940 by William Grant Still. He was a prominent composer, had a degree from Oberlin, studied at Princeton, also studied overseas in France, was the first African-American to conduct a professional symphony in the United States. And he left a large body of work, orchestral work, choral work, chamber music, arrangements of spirituals, and really is considered one of the prominent and important composers in America during the first half of the, well, he died in the 70s, so during the middle of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. this piece and the Lynched Him on a Tree, you can tell from that title that it's already some difficult subject that we're going to be approaching here. And it was written with the librettist, who was from Little Rock, Arkansas. She was the wife of the Solicitor General for the President Roosevelt. So she was active politically, and she was a social activist for social justice in Little Rock. And she combined with Grant Still to write this work. And immediately when you open the page and you see, and it's called For a White Choir and a Black Choir, and the white choir assumes the role of the lynch mob, and the black choir assumes the role of someone who comes upon their friend, their brother, their son hanging from the tree. It generated, of course, a lot of discussion in its time in 1940 when the New York Philharmonic premiered it in New York City. And as a result of the controversy and some of the forces required for this, as of 2016, there were only 28 performances that were in the directory, 28 performances from 1940 to 2016. So the opportunity to perform this, to have a collaborative choir with Dr. Taylor and Prairie View A&M, was just an extraordinary opportunity that just simply very few people have that chance. And we combined with the Arkansas Symphony. It's a union professional symphony located in Little Rock. I just couldn't have asked for a better situation, better colleagues, and frankly, better bunch of students who approached this with great maturity and with great empathy.
That's fantastic. And this is it's a meaningful piece. I actually just listened to a recording of it before we started right in, and it hits
powerful,
very, very hard. Yeah, it's a very powerful piece. It's a beautiful, you know, the symphonic parts are beautiful in their own way, and kind of haunting in a way. But then you've got, you know, these movements where it's this back and forth, and the soloist where you've got like a narrator essentially, and then the two choruses and what seems like a principal character, particularly in the fourth movement, where the mother of the lynched man has arrived. And it's very moving.
Yes, I think the thing that I want to make clear is that, yes, it's an important topic, it's an important subject, but musically, this can stand on its own with anything.
Exactly.
And sometimes we think, well, we will do this because it's important and it's historically significant. Yes, it is. But Grant Still was not sort of the second-tier composer.
Right.
He, like a lot of composers who were marginalized or underrepresented, it's something that we're not making sort of amends by saying, oh, we'll do this piece anyway. It's like we need to recognize the worth of this composer.
Absolutely. I think to Dr. Crabb's point, William Grant Still, and what I've loved about Dr. Crabb, that every time he talked about him, he was sure to say that he was a prominent American composer without the qualifier of his race. Because while his race is definitely important, and we appreciate his contribution because of that and the influence of the African-American culture on American music, he was an American composer that deserves to be seated at the same table with Samuel Barber and the rest of these great American composers, Aaron Copland, for example. I think the dynamic between the two choirs was something that, quite frankly, I didn't expect. I knew that the subject matter would be difficult for us to talk about. I knew that the repertoire was challenging, and I was anxious to see how each choir would hold up, because musically speaking, there were some, you know, really complex rhythms and I don't want to say disjunct melodies, but in some instances there were, you know, juxtaposed against the orchestra, which was doing its own thing. But what happened when we got there was, at first, both choirs were so incredibly well prepared. And then we began this conversation that we all knew was coming, but I don't think we knew that it was going to go to the place that it went to. And when I say that, I mean that what started as a conversation to get feedback turned into probably a 60-minute exercise where everyone, it felt like everyone in each choir spoke. And I could be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some who didn't. But the weight of the comments and the profound manner in which some of these students, some of which 18, 19, 20 years old, spoke with about this subject matter, it was highly emotional. And I will be the first to say that it got me for sure. It was emotional. It was thought-provoking. It was honest. And there were a lot of words and terms that were used that, without a disclaimer and without the understanding of what we were there to do, could be a little bit triggering, perhaps, for some to listen to. But both directors, conductors, did such a fine job of fostering an environment of respect, openness, and love that every student was able to express themselves and to be vulnerable in that situation. And I think that only enhanced the performance. It really did.
No doubt. Yeah.
That's really amazing that you guys got the opportunity to.
Yeah.
To do this piece.
I would just affirm what Marcus is saying, and the fact that, you know, it was a space where we knew we could sign, kind of, as Marcus said, be vulnerable. We could also say things that were, I'm afraid to admit that this is part of my experience, or this is what my grandparents are like, or I've never had this situation before. And being able to open that up to somebody that you've recently met.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you find, did the audience have time to process it as well after the performance? Were there?
Well, Marcus, you were facing the audience, but I there was an extended silence after the final chord. And
yes.
The form is such that the white choir opens by saying, "We've swung him higher than the highest pine, and we've cut his throat so he's not going to whine." And so they're complimenting themselves on a great evening out and hanging this person. And then the black choir comes up and finds the person hanging from the tree, and they are completely submissive. They are always saying, how are we going to handle this? There's never the sense that they are going to have the power. And that was one of the things that was brought up into discussion that is disturbing and moving. And then at the final, both choirs come together after an incredible emotional performance by our soloist, but Veronica Williams, who did just an incredible job, not only vocally, but with her expression. And the choirs come together at the end and say, "We have to take a look at this. We have to cut this body down and taste ourselves about what we are and who we are and why we do things like this, or a dark shadow will fall over our land." And it ends with this unresolved single tone at the end that leaves you wondering what it is. Yeah, please, Marcus, go ahead.
I think what set this up so well was the text actually was not printed in the program. And so Dr. Krabs' better half, his wife, Jenny Krabs, said
Thanks,
to, you're welcome, said to I believe it was Brian Hartman, correct? Is that right?
Right.
Yes, who was our liaison for Southwest ACDA, and very responsible, integral part in this coming together, said to Brian, "We should have the poetry read before the concert." And so in a matter of the libretto, read before the concert. And so in a matter of hours, I mean, I want to say 2 hours or less, he went to his hotel room and he found the source. He typed up the text. And then I read the text just before we sang. And having that moment, you knew that the audience, they just sat captive. It sounded like no one even breathed, because they were just so mesmerized by the severity of the text that I remember walking back to the riser to sing, and you could have heard a pin drop. And that same silence, that same spirit of contemplation was there on that final chord that is in the French horn. It's just holding out this single tone. And Dr. Crabb held it for quite some time, and he stopped, and it was just this hush. Before an applause, before anything, it was a hush. And you knew everybody in that room knew what just happened and knew what was to come and our part in what was to come next for all of us as a country, as a society, as a whole.
And if we could take away one thing or numerous things from that performance, what would they be?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is confronting things that we find uncomfortable, finding a way to talk about things in a respectful and civilized way, like the students were doing with each other, like they were looking at each other and admitting things and saying things that admitted their feeling of risk, their feeling of vulnerability, but realizing that there was a quote I read in preparation of the score saying, it's impossible to start anew until you confront your past. And if we don't confront the past of slavery and confront the past of lynching and confront the past of systemic racism, we will never get over it. We will never be able to solve it because we don't see the problem. And so to me, this was a really important part of this whole project.
Absolutely. And I'll add to that, and I'll say that in preparation for this, I had done some research about Missouri in and of itself. And in 2017, the Equal Justice Initiative, which is a Montgomery, Alabama-based nonprofit, which offers legal representation to prisoners and defendants who have been denied just treatment, they released a report that found that Missouri had the second highest total number of lynchings at 60, following close behind Oklahoma in first place with 70. And those are just documented lynchings. And one of the most recent lynchings in 1906 occurred in Springfield, Missouri, and lasted up to 15 hours, the records indicate. And so when we think about that and confront that past, it makes the words that Grant Still and the poet Katherine Garrison Chapman talk about, and just like in this piece, in those cases of the lynchings here in Missouri, these black men were accused of being what society deemed sexual aggressors, who were arrested and awaiting trial. But because, and this is a direct quote from the text, because justice was too slow for the white man, they were dragged out of their prison cells and lynched in front of the masses. And when you can really talk about that and confront that complicated, difficult history that belongs to both of our ancestors, mine and yours, I think that is when healing can really begin to take place. And I want to say this, that in Little Rock, Arkansas, I believe that the choir from Prairie View A&M and the choir from the University of Missouri Columbia took a major stride in jump starting that healing in both of our respective communities.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, how many times, for example, Aaron, how many times do we find a historically black college or university and a predominantly white institution like Mizzou in the same room talking about something difficult, talking about what it's like, what it feels like, their perspective, and trying to understand that? I mean, here I am, you know, I'm past 20, believe it or not, and this is the first time I've ever had this opportunity. I mean, these decades in the business, and I've never had that kind of situation. And have these kinds of problems to say, but from my perspective, what I read about, from my perspective, this is what we see or we feel. And just the opportunity that this created, and then, as I said, the maturity, the empathy, the civility, the respect that the students showed each other, my colleague, Dr. Taylor, to me, that's something that maybe, I don't know what the percentage would be, but a very small percentage have an opportunity to experience. And I agree that I think all of us came out of there changed. All of us came out of there with an understanding that I'm just so privileged to feel, to believe that we've had this opportunity and we were able to do this. I'm so thankful.
It's amazing. And that's one of the great things. And one of the things that we've been trying to point out over the last few weeks here on Mizzou Music, that music does have that power. Music can
Absolutely.
Build a community. Music can make us, even though now as distant as we are, still feel as though we're a part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we do need beauty, and music can provide that, but we also need to understand something deeper within ourselves. We need to understand sometimes things that it would be more pleasant not to think about. But without considering some of those uncomfortable topics, we remain less developed, less realized than we could. We don't solve some of the issues because we don't acknowledge the issues. And I do think the arts needs that role to provoke us into some response, some kind of human reaction. And then we say, okay, there you are. Now what are you going to do about it?
Right on. Well, Marcus Paul, this first off sounds like it was an amazing performance, and I'm so glad that the students and of both universities and that the Arkansas Symphony Orchestra all got to get together and make this happen. I think that would have been something really, really amazing to see. And I thank you both so much for coming on and taking some time out of your day to join me here and talk about it just a little bit.
Thank you,
I appreciate
the opportunity.
It was a pleasure.